Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Seattle beat Philadelphia 23-17. Of course, that game was not that close. The Eagles tacked on a Hail Mary and a two-point conversion in the final seconds of that game. And that was the very definition of meaningless and meaningful at the exact same time. More on that shortly. As for you 12s, I hate to be a huge buzzkill for you 12s, but I wouldn't be patting yourselves on the back for that effort. I'm not that impressed by what I saw last night. I mean, yes, the defense did have six sacks. Yes, it did force 5 3 and outs. Yes, DK Metcalf had himself a night, going for 10 receptions and a career-high 177 yards. Yes, he did most of that against my guy Darius Slay, including this bomb.
They do bring the extra man this time on 3rd and 13. Wilson will take a deep shot. Metcalf is there, and he's got it. DK Metcalf down to the 1.
Slay did not just get burned for that bomb. I mean, he did get burned for that bomb, but that's not all. He also got roasted by Seahawk linebacker Bruce Irvin on Twitter. Irvin is out with that ACL, but he does still have Twitter, and he dropped this. Quote, Slay, PFF grade, going to be terrible. End of quote. Rather than just cracking Slay, why don't we instead acknowledge that that was a great performance by Metcalf? And of course, after the game, he was talking about how it came to be.
It's kind of like coming home, you know, a place that had a chance to draft me, but, you know, they didn't. So, you know, I got to make them pay.
Yeah, I get that. You're going to use everything you can for motivation. And if you're the Eagles, that's going to leave a mark. And not just for a few days or until they hit the field again, but for as long as Metcalf is in the league, dominating suckers, because Metcalf is exactly the type of player that Philadelphia needs on offense right now. And they could have drafted him, and they didn't. And you can bet your ass he will remind them of it anytime they play, and even when they don't. Because the Philadelphia Eagles need players on offense right now. They need anyone at any position. If you've got any football experience whatsoever on any level, just swing by that facility, fill out an app, and they'll probably give you a pair of pads and a locker. This is why I'm not here to hype the Hawks, because they really didn't do anything other than what you're supposed to do if you're an alleged Super Bowl contender, namely beat a bad NFC Eastern team. So don't tell me that they sent any kind of message or made any kind of statement, because they didn't. All they did was beat a bad NFC Eastern team. Yeah, I mean, Russ was solid enough. Russ was back to doing Russ things. And Russ's days of being a turnover machine seemed to be a thing of the past. But that running game was pretty much non-existent. They spent the better part of the second half locked in a battle with a broken team. Because that's what the Eagles are right now. Man, they're broken, shattered from top to bottom. Offensively, physically, mentally, spiritually. Hell, Philadelphia committed 3 personal fouls in the first 21 minutes of that game. They gained 4 yards on their first 5 possessions. 4 yards on 5 possessions. Like, I'm no analytics genius, but if you're averaging less than a yard per possession, that's not good. That's
not good.
Below not good. And speaking of analytics geniuses, how many of you want to give the hands to the analytics genius who told Doug Peterson to go for 2 last night after that Hail Mary, when it didn't mean a damn thing to him, but created one of the most horrific backdoor covers ever? More on that shortly. Back to how crappy the Philadelphia offense is and how jacked up they are under center right now. I know that most of the heat is going to be directed at Carson Wentz. Understandably, because watching this guy go from not just an MVP candidate, but the MVP favorite a few years back, to a sack-taking, horrible decision-making, turnover-giving machine has been jaw-dropping. I mean, it's incredible. In 2017, this guy threw for 3,300 yards. He had 33 touchdowns in 13 starts. He had a passer rating of near 102. He was the future, not only of that team, but of the league. That was the guy you wanted to build around. This guy was number three on the NFL's top 100 in 2018. I mean, granted, it's not the most definitive list ever, but it shows you the level of respect that he commanded around the league only 2 years ago. Now I'm not sure that guy even makes the top 300. Everybody around the league was asking, how do we get our own Carson Wentz? Now everybody is asking, how can we avoid a Carson Wentz situation? This guy went from being the next big thing, and again, not only the face of that franchise, but potentially of the entire league, to being a cautionary tale. He went from being the guy that every single franchise wanted to the guy that you might want to get rid of now. And it happened pretty much overnight. Last season, he had a four-game run where he completed 68% of his passes for 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, and no picks. And he was doing it with a bunch of practice squatters and dudes off the street. Last season, 4 months ago, this guy was still thought of as an elite quarterback. The only question was, could he stay healthy? Could you keep him on the field? Now the question is, can we get him off the field? Hell, can we get him off the roster? Can we talk anybody else into taking this guy and that contract? Because it has all crashed and burned in a truly spectacular manner. And it's not just that he's making bad throws. I mean, he is making bad throws.
Wentz throwing, and there's the interception. In the end zone, Quandre Diggs. Fly, Seahawks, fly.
I mean, not just bad throws, although there are bad throws, but he's making terrible decisions which lead to bad throws. I mean, there's no doubt this guy's pressing. He's trying to do too much. I get that, because he's surrounded by a crew that can't do much. But it's not just that he's pressing, it's also that he's indecisive, and that's a bad combination. Being slow through your progressions and pressing is the perfect storm of bad quarterbacking, and it leads to a disaster. And now he looks like a shot fighter. Like, I keep waiting for the ref to step in and stop the fight because this dude is taking terrific punishment and clearly is no longer capable of defending himself. How about these numbers? 68 combined sacks and turnovers this season, which is 17 more than anybody else in the NFL. Take that for data. I'm talking about trailing in a division where the other quarterbacks are all backups, and you're a former number two pick overall. Then again, in his defense, not easy to play the game when you're running for your life, your guys are covered, and you're afraid that you might get your neck broken at any given second. And for everybody saying that they need to rip him out of the game, just give the ball to Jalen Hurts, if it were that simple, it would have been done by now, but it's not. And the fact is, it's not just about the quarterback. It's everything. In fact, at this point, and I never thought that I would say this, they're just not even that well coached. I'm not even sure they're a well coached team. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's true. Because somehow Doug Peterson went from this swaggering, gunslinging offensive genius to a guy who consistently makes truly whack calls. This is a guy who was the head man when they were running plays like the Philly Special. Do you remember how brash and how brass this call was?
This could decide the game. Fourth and goal. And they're going to snap it. And it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles, touchdown. How do you figure?
What a play call by Doug Peterson. This play call has a chance to be remembered as one of the all-time greats just going for it.
Wow. Were we really saying things like that about that guy? Was that guy really doing things like that? I mean, that team then was awesome. That team had a ton of it. That team had grown men so hyped that they were eating horse crap. Literally. That's how good they were. That's how much it they had. They had grown men eating horse crap. They went from winning the Super Bowl, though, to this. They went from being so good that they could win the Super Bowl with their backup to not knowing if their franchise guy is their franchise guy. And man, it happened fast. When it goes fast. That was not some slow erosion. That was a complete implosion. So what I'm saying is this. They're pretty much screwed right now. The only good thing is The home games are not loaded with tens of thousands of bitter, angry Philly fans looking to give their own players the hands when they leave the field. And yes, you are looking up at the Washington football team and the New York football Giants, but you're only one game back. So you got that going for you, which is nice. Hey, Doug, wake up. You're failing in the worst division ever. You're alienating nearly every gambler in the history of the world. And your peer, who is looking up at you, Mike McCarthy, can't even believe your play calling. And he's the dude running fake punts that no one anywhere is buying.
Fourth down and 10 after the sack, and it's a fake. They'll run an end around. Looking for a little running room is Wilson, and Cedric Wilson is going to go nowhere. Nothing doing.
Fourth and 10 deep in your own territory. I don't like that call.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Hell, Mike McCarthy can't believe your play calling, Dougie. And if you don't want to blame Peterson, and you can, and you should, but if you don't want to, go find Eagles D coordinator Jim Schwartz for pissing off DK Metcalf before the game.
One of the defensive coaches came up to me, and it kind of made me mad that he was like, I was in Detroit with Megatron, but you're not there yet. In my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So, had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game.
Was that Jim Schwartz?
Yes, sir.
Schwartz is like, hey, whoa. It's a compliment. Yeah, well, Big Dog didn't take it as a compliment. Here's my guy, Mark in Hollywood. Mark in Hollywood's in, quote, next topic, please. I think we'd all agree this has been some crazy, crazy year with a whole lot of stress. And the stress of daily life weighs on every last one of us. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, whether you're an elite athlete or just a regular person trying to get through the day, muscle pain and muscle tension is a real thing. I'm no different. This is why I use Theragun. What an amazing product. It's a handheld percussive therapy device which releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combination of depth, speed, and power. And right now, it does all that, and it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. That's because the all-new Gen 4 Theragun has a proprietary brushless motor that is so quiet, you're going to wonder if, in fact, it's even on. All while soothing your aching muscles with Theragun's signature power, amplitude, and effectiveness. This product blows my mind. Try Theragun yourself for 30 days. There is no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4 with an OLED screen, personalized Theragun app, and the quiet and power that you need. It starts at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. I've got mine. I use it. I love it. That's Theragun.com/Rome. Theragun.com/Rome. I am joined right now by Eric Musselman. Mus, before we talk basketball, man, how are you? How's Danielle? How's Mariah? How are the boys? How's the fam?
Jim, thanks so much for having me on back in the jungle. Everybody's doing good. Michael's on staff now, and Matthew's a sophomore at the University of San Diego. Mariah's doing good. Family's awesome. I hope yours is doing great as well.
Mus, mine's doing great. I appreciate that. Your energy is tremendous. Man, for so long, Mus, you and I talked about what it was like to work with your dad, Bill. So now you've got your own son on your staff. What's that been like?
You know, it's an interesting dynamic because, I know certainly with my dad, it was funny. When he got the job with the Timberwolves, I kept calling him as it got closer to training camp because I was coaching. I was actually a general manager in Rapid City of the old CBA league. And I kept saying, Dad, camp's 3 weeks away. Dad, camp's 2 weeks away, thinking he was going to hire me. And finally, he said, why do you keep asking me? Yeah, we're 3 days away. What's the big deal? I said, well, aren't you going to hire me as an assistant? He said, no, you got to pay your dues and you got to be a coach somewhere else before you join me. So he's director of recruiting, and he's not on the coaching staff, but he has a huge impact every day with me, whether it's watching film or helping organize how we're going about our recruiting planning and the vision that we look 2 to 3 years into the future from a recruiting standpoint.
Eric Musselman joining us. Eric, there's so much I want to talk to you about with your team, but one more thought about Michael. Like, did he always want to be in the business? Did you encourage it? Did you discourage it? How did you approach that with him?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting because I still can hear my mom. You know, when I went to San Diego, the University of San Diego, I told her I was going to go to law school and be a lawyer, and it was just to kind of get her off my back because she really did not want me to coach at all. But my father was my idol, my best friend. I wanted to do what he did, but you know, I think from a mom's perspective, she understands how brutal the business is. And you know, I wasn't sure. Michael was a really good athlete, played on a state championship team in California at Monta Vista. And I wasn't sure what he would do, but he did. He joined us at Nevada after his 4 years at San Diego and was a grad assistant. And he's really good on the floor when he was a GA at Nevada. So at that point was the first time that I thought, hey, he's definitely going to get into coaching. Originally, I thought maybe it would be on the management side, maybe work his way up through the NBA video room. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing better, especially if you've been through a divorce and you're not taking your sons to school every day. There's nothing better than walking into the office and saying, good morning, son. And then in the heat of the battle of games, to be able to look at him, you know, is something, you know, just lost time when he was younger. We're making up for it now.
That's actually awesome. That's beautiful. Eric Musselman joining us. You know, Mush, you mentioned like what it was like what your mother was saying. And when you were in San Diego, I can remember you and I going to the Castry Bar and Grill, having salads in Pacific Beach back in the day. I'm thinking back to the days also when you began your NBA career as an assistant coach. Like when you're putting together a roster right now, wherever you are, how much of that goes back? And I remember you and I having long conversations when you worked with the Orlando Magic and you were around guys like John Gabriel and Chuck Daly and Doc Rivers. How much of what you do right now in assembling a roster is what you learned from them back then?
Everything. You know, it was interesting because I was part, JR, I was part of the planning with John Gabriel, and it was a two-year, almost a two-and-a-half-year planning process of they were trying to, you know, clear as much cap space as they possibly could to land Tim Duncan and Grant Hill. So the initial planning on what restaurants, you know, we were going to go to and so on and so forth. I was with Gabe through that planning process, but everything that we do here, because there's so much recruiting that goes on at the NBA level, especially with the free agency part of the whole thing. Even our, when we, Gilbert Arenas had a great year after year one coaching the Warriors, and that was an entire recruiting process to put together to try to keep him from going somewhere else. So I think that we've taken a lot of that stuff, even our terminology in our recruiting room when we start having meetings. It's, is this player in the college game? Is this player a future lottery pick for us? Is he a late first rounder? Is he a second rounder? Is he maybe a two-way player? That's kind of how we label our players internally that we're recruiting rather than say, is he a one-star, two-star? Is this guy a five-star? We have our own verbiage based on, you know, my time at the NBA, and I'm a little bit more comfortable, and our staff has so many NBA people on staff. Corey Williams played for the Chicago Bulls when they won the championship with Michael Jordan, and Clay Mosier was with the Lakers for the last seven years before joining us last year. David Patrick was a scout with the Houston Rockets, and so our staff, and Earl Boykins, who played for me with the Warriors, so we're all comfortable, Jim, with that type of terminology.
Eric Musselman is joining us. You know, Mush, you've always been one of those guys, like I've never talked to a coach who didn't talk about process, but you've always had a process and a methodology. You've always had that grind. You've always had that work ethic. I always thought you had an extremely high basketball IQ, but you're somebody who's been really flexible, and you've adapted to everything and the way the world has changed, the way the game has changed. I'm really curious, though, the way you approach this, like you mentioned, divorce, whether it's personal or professional, you've had to kind of reinvent yourself like a lot of coaches, but every few years, like there's always a new challenge. There's a new program. There's a move. There's a new state. There's pro basketball. There's college basketball. How have you gone about approaching that reinvention every few years?
Well, it was interesting, you know, like I knew I wanted to get into the pro game, the NBA game, and then, you know, went the assistant route, obviously, and then got two opportunities as a head coach at the NBA level. And I didn't think, Jim, that it would be very easy to get a third crack at it. So I wanted to reinvent or recreate my career, however you want to word it. And I wanted to do the college game and kind of in between going from the NBA, you know, to college instead of going back as an NBA assistant, because I had a great opportunity with Flip Saunders, who had played for my dad and was actually part owner of the T-Wolves, and a guy that I had emulated growing up. When I didn't go join Flip as an assistant, you know, the college game was a new challenge. It was different. I had done two national teams, Dominican Republic and Venezuela. And so, you know, your juices get going when you have a new opportunity and a new challenge. And so there's not many people that have coached at the pro level, coached overseas, you know, coached at the NBA level, coached at the D-League level. So I love new challenges and in a great spot here at Arkansas for sure.
Arkansas head basketball coach Eric Musselman joining me for a few more moments. So Mus, last season you had four scholarship players over 6'5", none over 6'8". This year you've got a lot more height. As you've said, the team's going to look a lot different getting off the bus. How much different is that going to make you on the court?
Well, we're a lot different. You know, we're a deeper team. You know, last year I let two guys pretty much, you know, freestyle, Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe. One was drafted by Philly and Isaiah Joe, and then Mason Jones is signed a contract with the Houston Rockets. And really, we were undersized. We were horrific on the backboards. And we knew that the only way we could survive was take away our opponent's three-point shot from a philosophical standpoint. We led the nation in defending the three. This year, we're bigger. You know, Connor Vanover, a 7'3" transfer from the Cal Bears, he had six blocks the other night. We probably didn't have six blocks the whole year last year. So we are a different team, but we're still evolving in a lot of ways as well. Last year, when you have a smaller rotation, Jim, it's really interesting. When you have a small rotation, it's really easy to quickly form roles. When you have more depth, it becomes much more challenging to try to figure out roles. And I also think it's more difficult for the individual players when you have a deeper team. You can get subbed out of games quicker, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of things that go into having more on your roster that maybe you don't, you know, the public doesn't really understand.
Eric Musselman joining me. Mus, something else, you've been breaking out shirts and masks for different teams in different sports this year. Like one day it'll be the Steelers, another day it's the Orlando Magic, another day it's the Birmingham Rumble Ponies. What's your process behind that? How much fun are you having with that?
You know, obviously if you're a head coach in the NBA, you're not going to do that. And I got my wife, she kind of self-checks me every day. Like, are you serious? You're walking out of here in a New England Patriots shirt and mask today. But the bottom line on this thing, in our world, social media is so powerful, and I'm not worried about connecting with a, you know, 55-year-old NBA GM. I'm worried about connecting with a 17-year-old high school player, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what conversation pieces can I have? And so a lot of our social media stuff is based on solely on how do we connect, how are we different. And it started off really just, you know, with the pandemic, like how do we encourage, you know, people to wear masks and then, you know, have a little bit of fun with it. And, you know, it started off one or two teams would send something, and that now almost every day when the mail comes to our office, we're like, all right, what, you know, who's it going to be? And we've had some fun with it because there's been a lot of stuff that have been shipped to us that we never even reached out to certain, you know, programs or organizations.
Hey, Mus, one last thing you mentioned, Danielle. I want to ask you, like, Seth Greenberg and I would talk about this. His wife, Karen, obviously was so important to what he did and the program and the way she connected with the players and how much she was a factor in what he did. Like, she loved it. I know Karen missed it when Seth has gone on. He's become a brilliant broadcaster. What about Danielle? How important is she to what you do and the team, and how much does she enjoy it? Because she also had a really successful career herself.
No, she's a huge part of our, number one, she's a huge part of our recruiting. You know, when we have recruits and their parents over to our house, she's way more valuable than I am. And even to our current team, because of her experience, you know, working for NFL Network on air, working for ESPN on air, you know, she is able to watch one of our players do an interview post-game and then send them a text and say, hey, you got 5 minutes where we can talk, you know, and she can give some helpful hints on, you know, how to conduct an interview. And that's really important for student athletes that are young and aspire to have a camera or a microphone in front of their face and want to play beyond, you know, college. So she's really instrumental in a lot of different areas. And, you know, after the game, she's able to, you know, see a parent who maybe the player didn't play as much and say, hey, you know, we still love him and, you know, we still believe in him and so on and so forth. So, and she's brilliant with, you know, with helping me with social media stuff as well.
Good stuff. Head basketball coach at Arkansas in his second season there, coming off that 20-win season. Arkansas is 2-0. UTA is at Arkansas tomorrow night. Good friend of mine, Eric Musselman. Mus, great to hear your voice. Great to hear you back on the program, as always. Good luck with it. Glad we could get caught up.
JR, it's awesome catching up. Thanks for having me in the jungle. It's the best. Thank you so much.
But one of the more disappointing revelations of the year was to find out that JR Smith, who I love, and one of the reasons I love J.R. Smith is because he is the supposed Henny God. However, come to find out, my man doesn't even sip on Hennessy. I mean, for a guy that's been nothing but so right, that just seems so bleeping wrong. Part of this guy's charm, part of this guy's legend, is he's the Henny God. And then he busts out one day and says, man, I don't even like this stuff. It's incredible. That'd be like me busting out after all those years and saying, man, I hate Bombay Sapphire. It tastes like ass. I'm really disappointing. But to each their own. You know, and in defense of J.R. Smith, it's not like he glossed himself that, right? So sometimes a reputation, true or not, will precede a person.
I don't even drink Henny, bro. I don't. Nah, that's not my bro. I hate that for real.
That's an amazing statement. I mean, you can even hear the frustration. Like, man, I don't even drink Henny, bro. That is so disappointing. Play that one more time, Albie.
I don't even drink Henny, bro. I don't. Nah, it's not my bro. I hate that for real.
I hate it. I don't drink it. Dude, you're the Henny God, right? Apparently not. So, it's time to officially pass the baton and the bottle to somebody who actually wants it, to somebody who earned it, to somebody who's about it, to somebody who lives that life, talks that talk, walks that walk. Who's about that action, boss? A guy named Marshawn Lynch. Because yesterday, a clip from ESPN's Peyton's Places dropped. And Beast Mode is, in fact, all about that Henny, boss.
You believe in superstitions? I always like to read the program front to back, for whatever reason, before the game. You know, by the end of the season, you know where every accountant for the Colts went to college. What right, were yours? Right. What was your
My superstition was that I needed to have maybe a shot and a half before every game.
Of?
Hennessy. What you mean
I was thinking, yeah. Gatorade. Toradol. I don't know what I was thinking.
Hell no.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete Carroll.
My backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
Man, I wish there were this was the podcast so I could drop a four-letter bomb right there. Like, holy bleep. I played some sound clips in my day. Some great sound clips. Sound clips where I've had trouble picking my favorite part. And that would be one. That is absolutely impossible. There is so much that is so good about that. That is the XO Cognac Liquid Gold in a snifter sound clip. From the pour to the last sip. Starting with the fact that Pinky's pregame superstition was reading the game day program front to back.
I always like to read the program front to back for whatever reason. Before the game, you know, by the end of the season, you know where every accountant for the Colts went to college.
I mean, like, breaking down film and knowing more about the opposition than the head coach and reading the playbook. Hell, writing the playbook were not enough. This nerd had to know who was working the corn dog stand at Lucas Oil. I mean, most dudes are getting hyped on music, maybe saying a prayer. Peyton's out here thumbing through a souvenir book. Incredible, but not surprising, right? Incredible, but not surprising. Then there's Beast Mode, who says he needed a shot or a shot and a half before every game. And he doesn't even bother saying what kind of a shot, because to him, it's that much of a given. Like, who wouldn't know? Who would need to ask? Pinky? Pinky's out here asking, a shot of what?
I needed to have maybe a shot and a half before every game.
Of?
Of? Man, this is so amazing. This is brilliant. Marshawn is so about that life that he doesn't think he needs to say. Peyton is so not about that life because he's Peyton and he's been reading programs. So he's got to ask the question, right? He's naturally curious. And wait a minute, man. I'm over here reading the program and you're taking a shot? A shot of what?
Of.
It's perfect. But not as perfect as Bottle Mode being completely dumbfounded and, in fact, somewhat insulted that Pinky even had to ask the question.
Hennessy, what you mean?
I was thinking,
yeah.
I mean, he is bewildered. Like, what? Are you kidding? This is so good. And then Peyton throws out some pretty logical explanation for his question. Like, he's trying to explain himself. And that only seems to offend Beast Mode even more.
Gatorade. Toradol. I don't know what I was thinking.
Hell no.
Like, Pinky is used to being the smartest guy in the room. And he's in deep. A shot. Like, a shot of what? Gatorade? Yeah, dude, because guys are doing shots, pounding shots of Gatorade. I mean, he made a slight recovery when he went with the Toradol bomb. You know, like you're taking the spike, right? Gatorade? Toradol? Hell nah. Like, what are you talking about, man? Hydration? Electrolytes? Pain management? What, before a football game? Hell nah. Pass the Henny. And if you were thinking that the Seahawks had the Hen Dog on deck for Marshawn, he is here to set the record straight on that, too.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete Carroll.
Bar in my backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
Is there a bar in the locker room for Schneider and Peter? No, man. There's a bar in my backpack.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete Carroll.
Bar in my backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
No, man. There's a club up here in my backpack. Not only is he one of the best backs ever. Not only is one of the best backs ever to do it, shooting Hen Dog before the games, he's getting it out of a backpack. He's bringing it in himself in a backpack. Man, that is as real gets. B-Y-O-H. Bring your own Henny. Man, that is so Marshawn Lynch. That is so awesome. That is so Beast Mode. You ever see two guys on more opposite ends of the spectrum? You ever see two more polar opposites have an amazing exchange in 35 seconds? Check out the bookworm nerd. I mean, don't get me wrong, a genius, an absolute genius and an amazing player, but a bookworm nerd and the new Henny God. Trading superstitions one more time.
You believe in superstitions? I always like to read the program front to back for whatever reason. Before the game, you know, by the end of the season, you know where every accountant for the Colts went to college. What
right,
were yours?
Right.
What was your
My superstition was that I needed to have maybe a shot and a half before every game.
Of?
Hennessy. What you mean
I was thinking,
yeah.
Gatorade. Toradol. I don't know what
Toradol.
I was thinking.
Hell no.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete Carroll.
Bar in my backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
I love also that they're talking superstitions. Hey, man, I'm really superstitious. If I don't get me a shot of that orange Gatorade, I can't go out there. And Toradol, man. You know what Toradol is. You know what Toradol is about. I understand why guys take that spike, because they have to do what they have to do to get on the field, but I wouldn't do it for a superstitious purpose. Hey, man, Hey, man, step on a crack, break your mama's back, take a shot of Toradol. Like, I'm superstitious before horse races. I don't load up on Toradol before. What kind of superstition would that be, Pinky? Toradol?
Toradol. I don't know what Toradol. I was thinking.
Hell no.
Who's even more incredulous than me? Marshawn. He's like, Toradol? Hell no.
Toradol.
Nah.
I don't know what Toradol. I was thinking.
Hell no. Nah.
Beast Mode is now Bottle Mode. He's officially the new Henny God. I just wish that he didn't take so long to let all of us know. In fact, that's kind of the problem with Marshawn Lynch. Like, we don't know nearly enough. What we know is awesome, but we only know what he lets us know because Marshawn is a man of very few words to all of us. Man, but every time this guy opens his mouth, something amazing happens. Never mind what he does on the field. Every time my man opens his mouth, something amazing happens. I just wish he'd let us know that sooner because J.R. Swish hates that bleep. And that was a bitter enough pill to swallow. But luckily now, we know that Bottle Mode loves it and has been loving it. Just like I love knowing that when he caused a literal earthquake in Seattle against the Saints, after trucking 20 dudes in one house call, that he had to have been fueled up on the hen dog. Marshawn Lynch, if you need him. Still one of the greatest sound bites in sports history, and he is not even trying. Man, thank goodness Pinky set him up for that one. He was trying. And luckily, we got some gold out of both of them. That is an amazing exchange.
A shot and a half before every game.
Of?
Hennessy. What you mean of?
I was thinking,
yeah.
Gatorade. Toradol. I don't know what
Toradol.
I was thinking.
Hell no.
And there's a bar right there in the locker room in Seattle. Schneider and Pete Carroll.
My backpack.
Got it. The backpack.
Jim Rome here. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? Well, for one, there's something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by the other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic Clearview packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four great flavors: Old Fashioned with a hint of brown sugar sweetness, Teriyaki, Peppered, and if you need a little more zing, there's Hot and Spicy. All are chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper is a better way to snack. Make sure Old Trapper is part of your weekly grocery list and keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? Errol Spence Jr. and Danny Garcia. Saturday at AT&T Stadium. It is live. It is on pay-per-view. We are joined by Errol Spence Jr. right now. Errol, it's nice to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How's it going?
Good, good, man. Great to have you on. So we've got ourselves a fight week. You're a few days out from stepping in against Danny Garcia. How you feeling? How was your camp?
Camp been great, man. I'm very excited. I'm pumped up. You know, I've been training hard, focused. And I'm happy that, you know, it's the final stretch now. It's fight week, and we're a couple days away from fighting. So I'm really excited about this.
All right, so the fight's going to take place in Dallas. Back in 2019, you faced unbeaten four-division world champion Mikey Garcia at AT&T Stadium. What was it like fighting in the home of the Dallas Cowboys for the first time, and how much are you looking forward to getting back and doing it again on Saturday?
Fighting there the first time, it was surreal. I mean, fighting in front of that, my first time fighting in front of 50,000 plus fans, and then, you know, just an added bonus fighting at home in front of my family, friends, and, you know, people who supported me since the Olympics and since day one. So for me, it was just a plus and a dream come true because I grew up watching the Cowboys, and now I'm fighting back there again. You know, like I said, it's a dream come true again, just fighting here the second time and, you know, fighting in front of the whole Cowboys organization and other Cowboys fans. It's a blessing and a dream.
Errol Spence Jr. is my guest. And then you follow that up with a win over Mikey Garcia, or you follow the win over Garcia with a win over Sean Porter here in Los Angeles to take home that WBC belt. As you go back to that night, what kind of statement do you feel like you made to the world in winning that fight the way you did?
I think I made an impactful statement because I showed everybody that, you know, with the Mike Garcia fight, I showed everybody I can box. With the Sean Porter fight, I showed everybody that I can brawl and I can stand there inside in the pocket and really, you know, trade shots with a guy. So I feel like I showed the best of both worlds, and I got, you know, everything it takes, you know, to continue on winning and beating the best fighters out there that they place in front of me.
Errol Spence Jr. is my guest. And then after that win over Porter, Danny Garcia comes into the ring and he challenges you. What was your reaction to that, and why was this the fight that you wanted?
Oh, for me, it was just, you know, like I always said on social media, tables turn, because in the beginning it was me calling out these Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, the Thurmans, and everybody else. I was on the outside calling them out, you know, trying to get inside the house. But now I strung my way inside the house, and when I beat Kell Brook, and now the other guys that ran out the back door and out the front door asking to come back in and to fight me. So you know, it's a blessing. It shows hard work pay off. And I won this fight because he's one of the guys that I've been wanting to fight since I turned professional. And, you know, I'm finally getting the opportunity to show the world, you know, how great I am by beating another top welterweight.
Errol Spence Jr. is my guest. He's joining us before a championship fight. Errol, it was shortly after the Porter fight that you were in that horrific car accident, one that could have been fatal. Your Ferrari flipped over. You were ejected from the car. I want to be really respectful because I don't want to bring up bad memories, but you've also talked about how you really don't remember that much from the accident. What was the rehabilitation process like after the accident?
Oh, man, it was just grueling, man. You know, like they say, you know, The mind is the strongest muscle in the body. And for me, you know, it was mind over matter. And it was like a lot of days, you know, I wanted to stop or, you know, something was aching or, you know, in pain. Like my neck probably didn't stop hurting until about like 5 months after the accident, 4 or 5 months after the accident. So, you know, I had to, you know, basically, you know, fight through the pain and just rehabilitate myself and get back. And I didn't, you know, people wanted me to go see physical therapists and, you know, mental therapy and things like that. But, you know, I just trusted myself and just basically, you know, got it out the mud myself and just grinded myself and, you know, got to the point with just my loved ones and my coach and, you know, my father and just, you know, thinking of my kids and not quitting, not failing them. So I think, you know, that outside influence too, you know, born, you know, strength into me, you know, coming back this soon to fight.
I mean, you know, it's amazing, right? Like, I'm trying to figure out, it's one thing to say, like, you got it out of the mud and you did what you had to do and you had people around you and you were able to grind through it, but it doesn't begin to do justice to what you overcame. I mean, was there any point, because you yourself said you should have lost your life that night, did you ever think about retiring from fighting after that happened?
Yeah, for a little bit. You know, I was like, because, you know, I was pretty banged up. So, you know, I was sitting in the bed like, you know, I don't know, you know, if I can fight anymore or, you know, and then I had to go see a doctor. So I'm like, man, I got to go see, you know, a doctor to, you know, see if my brain's okay because, you know, my body, you know, went head up with concrete. So, I mean, most people lose that battle. So just going to see the doctor and, you know, saying that I don't have any brain bleeding and stuff like that, you know, that for me, that could only, you know, just be a blessing. And, you know, that was out of my control and out of, you know, my powers that, you know, I didn't have any brain bleeding or, you know, any swelling or anything like that. And it allowed me to come back this fast, you know. So, you know, I believe it was just, you know, something to learn from and just, you know, stay 100% dedicated to the sport. And you know, and just don't take my life for granted. And it actually helped me too, just not taking stuff for granted and spending time with family and loved ones and actually getting that time because you never know when your day will end.
Errol Spence Jr. is joining us. So obviously it's going to change your perspective. Something else you did, you moved from Uptown Dallas to Red Oak. You bought some land. You've got some horses that you can saddle up. You've got some cows. What's that done for your peace of mind?
It done a lot to my peace of mind. I didn't move to Red Oak, too, by the way. I moved in the outskirts of Dallas, but not
Red
Oak.
Got it. Okay. Got it.
But it done a lot. I feel like, you know, riding horses is very peaceful, and it just gives you a peace of mind. And I never really even touched a horse or had cattle. Like, I got cows now. I got goats. Like, I never even touched those things. And now I have all that, and I feel like, you know, it's very therapeutic and peaceful. And it gives me a peace of mind being out there riding a horse and just being out there with all the land. And, you know, I'd rather be out here and not stuck in an apartment where you can't walk outside. And early in the morning, you hear cranes and other stuff going off and alarms and things like that. Where out here, it's just peaceful. Everybody mind their business. I can shoot guns out here, you know, ride horses and just kick with my family. I got swimming pools. So it's so much privacy out here.
You know, Spence Jr. joining us. I know it. Open space is great. We own horses. I absolutely love them, so I know what you're talking about. You know, something you've talked about before I let you go, you said, quote, "I know people are looking out to see if I've lost a step or won't be at my best, but I'm 100% focused and everything is on point in camp. I just can't wait to go out there and put on a show," end quote. So what's your reaction when you hear people say that maybe you have lost a step, maybe you're not what you used to be?
For me, it's just added motivation, you know. I feel like it either can get you up or get you down. And, you know, criticism or it just added motivation. And I don't even see it as criticism, really, you know, some of the stuff because, you know, it's to be expected. I mean, for me to get in that type of accident and people to see it on video and things like that, it's to be expected that, you know, they say, man, is he going to come back the same? Is he still the same? Are we going to get the same Errol Spence? So, for me, you know, I'm a very realistic person, so, you know, I see what they're talking about because, you know, I would see the same thing if somebody had an accident and I seen it. I'd be like, man, that dude's not coming back the same. He won't be the same. So, you know, everybody will have to tune in December 5th on Fox Pay-Per-View, order it, or come to the fight at the AT&T Stadium. You will see an electrified Errol Spence Jr.
Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see it. All right, so finally, we know styles make fights. When you look at Garcia, where is he the most vulnerable, and how do you see the fight going, Errol?
I feel like style make fight, and is definitely going to make this fight because Danny Garcia is always in an exciting fight. I'm always in an exciting fight. And I feel like, you know, basically we're going to try to dictate, to make each other dictate the pace in the earlier rounds, and then, you know, I think it's going to turn into an all-out fight, you know. And that's something that I welcome. So I think it's going to be just an exciting, great fight where Danny's going to give it his all. I'm going to give him my all. His dad going to be pushing him. And, you know, I'm going to try to get this, or I am going to get this victory in my hometown and put on a great show and a great performance. And, you know, everybody's going to celebrate and thank and say that Errol Spence Jr. is back.
Hey, Errol, I've got about 1 minute. I have to ask you, like almost anybody else in your situation would take a tune-up fight. You're not doing that at all. Why are you approaching it the way you are when you could have had a tune-up fight?
I think because I'm a real fighter. You know, I'm unified champion, had two belts. I feel like it's my duty to, you know, to basically, you know, fight the guys that's out there and give guys the opportunity. And I'm not one of those guys that's going to hold up the belts or you know, fight tune-ups as a tune-ups and fight mandatories and, you know, guys is not worthy. I feel like Danny Garcia been in the game for a long time, and he's definitely a worthy opponent, ex-world champion. And for me, I'm just a real fighter, and I feel like I'm 100% back, and I know I'm going to put on an amazing show on December 5th.
Your warrior, Errol Spence Jr. versus Danny Garcia, Saturday, AT&T Stadium, live on pay-per-view. He is the IBF and WBC welterweight champion of the world. Errol, I appreciate you. Thank you so much. Good luck this weekend, and so good to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Steve in Long Island. Steve, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Jim. Big, huge fan out here at Suffolk County, Long Island, New York. Huge fan of the Jim Rome Show.
My man. Thanks so much, Steve. How are you doing?
You do a great job. Listen, I just want to follow up what you were talking about the last night's game. Yes, I had Seattle. Yes, I had given 6.5, okay? A small, just a, you know, minor wager, okay? But the whole point is, you know, you first of all, you get this Hail Mary, that's fine. but then you leave the offense on the field to go for 2 points? I mean, did somebody on the Eagles have a lot of money? Did the coach have a lot of money on his own team? Did the quarterback have a lot of money on his own team? I don't get it. I am just absolutely livid, not just for me, but the millions of fans that listen to your radio station that are flipping out right now, and I'm venting for them. I mean, that's just they needed 2 scores. Why not just kick the extra point and then do your onside kick? If you get lucky, fine. If not, fine. But what happened last night was just absolutely, absolutely outrageous. For anybody out there that does a little wagering on games and stuff, it was just outrageous. You know, as quickly as I could say I lose a game, you know, there's a lot of times that I also win in last-second games, too. But what transpired last night was absolutely, it was an abomination. There was just no reason for them to go for 2 points.
My man, let me jump in. Steve, first of all, Steve, great job. Yeah, you speak for so many people. Rack the phone call. It's my man, Steve, on the island. And then, with about 20 seconds left in the game, it didn't look like the lock of the week. It looked like the lock of the year. Hell, it looked like the lock of the decade. How many of you on either side of that had already turned the game off? How many of you Eagle fans were pissed and moved on and went to bed? How many of you who had hit the Hawks and laid the 6.5 already had banked that money mentally, or better yet, physically, had already spent that money? If any of you did any of those things, man, shame on you. And I'm not here to pile on, because weird things happen, especially this year. But as weird as things get, and weird is usually good, but not in this case, nobody could have possibly have seen this crappy game ending the way it did. 50, and this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt 85% of you. But with fit, because if you may have missed it, I need to lay this out, and you're going to find out why Steve was so pissed. And 85% other Steves are pissed. 15 seconds left, 23-9, Seattle up. The simple math would tell you that's a 14-point lead for a Seattle gambler with a 6.5-point spread.
The simple
it is
math
simple
says that's 50
math.
Hours on hold.
Right, Hawk? Simple math.
The simple math.
That's the simple math. Now, let me give you some Jim Rome math. According to Jim Rome math, you probably have a 99.999% chance of covering if you're on the Hawks, minus 6.5 in that situation. However, Carson Wentz has the ball on the Seattle 33, and he had other plans. Alvy, roll it.
Wentz is in the gun. 5-yard snap. Drops back 4. Moves around the pressure. Arches a spiral pass. It goes in the end zone. It's a jump ball. And it's caught on the ricochet. It's caught by Rodgers, the tight end. It's caught. That's a touchdown.
What a tremendous play by Rodgers. One-handed that. Woo! What a catch.
That's Westwood One, and who else? The Hail Mary King. The Hail Mary King himself, Richard Rodgers, with that one-handed catch. You know, seeing him line up before that play, I was kind of flashing back to A-Rod and him in Detroit. Of course he caught that ball. Of course he caught it with one hand. Of course he stuck out that big claw, and it just sort of stuck to it. But, and my man Stephen Long Island laid this out, if you're a Seattle bettor, even through all of that, you're still good. You're still good because you're up 8. They kick the point. The point after, you avoid a huge scud. You sneak out of there with the dub, and you're thankful. Oh, wait a minute. Freaking Dougie P is playing for 2. If you've got Seattle minus 6.5, and you see them lining up for 2, now you're freaking out. He's playing for 2. What the hell for? The game is over. What does a 2-point conversion get this guy? The hell is he doing? The worst nightmare ever is playing out right before your eyes, because you know Seattle doesn't give a damn if they get it. Seattle's not playing the line. Seattle is playing for scoreboard, but not Dougie. Apparently Dougie is on the Eagles sideline playing on behalf of every casino in Vegas and Jersey. Dougie is just doing what some analytics dork or some big-ass analytics placard is telling him to do. and he decides to go for two. And everybody who's got the Hawks minus 6.5 is thinking, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But he's thinking, it's in my team's best interest. I think I'll go for two. But every Hawks bettor is thinking, oh my God, this is not happening. Oh my God, this is not happening. And then this happened.
Oh my God, this is not happening.
Oh yes,
the Eagles have attempted the most two-point conversions in the NFL, 14 on the season. And a lane opens up nicely for Miles Sanders, who strolls in for two.
A lane opens up nicely is putting it mildly. Of course the Hawks let this guy walk right in. Of course they let him walk right in. Why wouldn't they? They didn't have anything on the game. Douglas must have. He had a bleeping play card that told him to go for two in that situation. Cover for the Eagles. Plus 6.5 bettors. Legendary nad shot for Hawks minus 6.5 guy in an instant first ballot Hall of Fame bad beat. Pin that one up for one of the worst beats ever. A truly horrific backdoor cover and beat. How bad? Bad enough that I'm talking about it on the show. Why am I talking about it on the show? It goes back to the fact, well, because I'm coming off of what Stephen Long Island said. And it goes back to the fact that I do, in fact, have the Twitter app. And it's on my phone. And people were losing their bleeping minds. Hell, Doug was trending number two on Twitter after that happened. That was an amazing thing to see play out. I mean, first the Hail Mary. A Hail Mary that worked. And then when he lined up to go for two. And you knew Seattle wasn't going to try and defend it. I mean, I'm even going to ask the question. I mean, Steve's already come in. If you want to share your misery, go ahead. Like, action on these games are the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, and that was a perfect example of that for each side. How good did it feel to win that? And how bad did it feel to lose that? For real, has anybody asked Doug why he went for two? I'm asking on behalf of the 85% of the people who got down on that game. Not me. I'm here for entertainment purposes only. I don't need action to enjoy these games. Well, hell, they pay me to watch the games.
Rick the Adam Hawk. Rick the Adam Hawk. What's the money line? Rick the Adam Hawk. Low GPA. Work for me some day. Alvin, drop the squawk. I'm Adam Hawk. Rick the Adam Hawk, Rick the Adam Hawk, Luxury PA, work for me some J, Alvin drop the squawk, I'm Adam Hawk, Luxury PA, work for me some J, Alvin drop the squawk, I am Adam Hawk.